Welcome, everybody, to Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris on this Wednesday. Good to see all of you. Natalie is off today. This is the show where we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And boy, our top story tonight is being largely ignored by the mainstream media, specifically what Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had to say yesterday about American troops being involved in the Ukraine war and how that's inevitable if Ukraine is supposed to win. On top of that, you have NATO now saying, yes, in fact, Ukraine will be, in fact, a member of NATO. That was a unequivocal statement. We've already heard that a few months ago, but now it's stamped, signed, sealed, delivered. That's coming. Putin is not happy about that, of course. That is the red line that they're never going to cross. So Colonel Douglas McGregor is going to be joining us here in just a few minutes to talk all about that and more. We're also looking at the vaccine passports that are set to be rolled out by the World Health Organization. Number of countries submitting their updates and their changes to the language of the draft proposal for the World Health Organization's vaccine passports. This would be global. So just imagine how you'll be able to travel or not travel, buy things or not buy things, get on public transport or not get on public transport, perhaps based on your vaccine passport status. That's coming. We'll tell you all of that in the draft proposal tonight. We're also looking at natural immunity, something you were not allowed to talk about just a few short months ago. In fact, it's even buried in the terms of service of certain video platforms that you're not really even allowed to talk about it. Well, now the cat is out of the bag with major new information about how effective it actually is. So perhaps they'll allow us to start talking about that. So we've got all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. So welcome in, everyone, to Redacted. If you were watching our live version of the show just a short time ago, boy, we had all sorts of crazy internet issues. We don't know what was going on and why it was happening, so we apologize for that. But we're back here, and here's the show for you in its entirety, and we apologize for that. So crazy. And it's when you prepare a show all day, you're literally getting carpal tunnel syndrome working on a show. Our whole team, David, Philip, Grimm, everyone behind the scenes putting the show together as well. And then something happens crazy with internet on Rumble and YouTube. It was all craziness today. So anyway, we're back here. So we've got a busy, busy show for you on this Wednesday. We will not disappoint you, we hope. And we do have a great newsletter that you should all check out as well, which is going to redacted.inc. Go to that website, not .com, it's redacted.inc. And every morning you'll receive the newsletter first thing in the morning over your cup of coffee. And just put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email. You need to verify that. And then when you get the email, you know, you'll say, okay, yes, I'd like to sign up. And that's great. Click there and you verify it. That's great. And then tomorrow morning, you'll get the newsletter first thing in your inbox that you can read over your cup of coffee. We cover like four or five of the big stories of the day. Plus, we try to make you laugh a little bit. We try to make you smile. We try to get you out the door on your way to work with a little bit of news that you can use. And you can, like I said, read it in about 5 minutes. Again, redacted.inc is the place to go to sign up. Redacted.inc is the place to go to sign up. Well, a lot of big developments in the war in Ukraine that we want to get to, including big admissions from NATO that Ukraine will become a member of NATO after all. The United States admitting it can't track any of the weapons heading into Ukraine. And President Trump saying that we're all headed for World War III. This may be one of the most dangerous periods in American history. For more context and nuance, let's bring in Colonel Douglas McGregor. Colonel, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
So let's start with the comments from NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg admitting that Ukraine will become a NATO member. Said it pretty emphatically. Listen.
After the war, like, what's the internal growth?
So, well, NATO allies have agreed that Ukraine will become a member of our alliance, but at the same time, that is a long-term perspective. What is the issue now is to ensure that Ukraine prevail as a sovereign, independent nation, and that therefore we need to support Ukraine.
I see that the future of Ukraine is to be part of European Union and also member of NATO.
So, Colonel, what are your thoughts on that? NATO. No, it's getting a new member in Ukraine.
I don't think this is an admission as much as a stated goal. But having said that, I think the real purpose of this is to prevent any negotiations from being held. If you take the position that there is no alternative to NATO membership for Ukraine, you're effectively telling the Russians that their preference for a non-aligned neutral state in Ukraine is no longer up for discussion. That means Russians have to fight this war to the finish. There will be no negotiated settlement. And that's what Washington and London want. I don't think everyone else in Europe shares that view, but that's clearly the attitude in Washington and London.
So just wiping Ukraine off the map is the alternative? That's what Washington and London want?
Well, I don't think they want that necessarily. I know that the Russians don't want that, but you just leave the Russians no choice. If you tell them that at the end of this war, whatever that means and whenever that occurs, that Ukraine will be a member of NATO, that turns everything back to an existential threat to Russia. The Russians know that if they relent in any way, if they admit, for instance, that half of Ukraine can become part of Russia, in other words, the western half or something, then they've got the problem they had back in January and February, which is this huge anti-Russian force, highly trained, well-equipped army ready to attack them. So why would they do that? So this is designed to kill any hope for a negotiated settlement. That's all.
Fascinating. Then, of course, we have President of Ukraine Zelensky saying yesterday that American sons and daughters will have to shed blood in Ukraine, that's what we have to do in order to secure the victory.
The U.S. will have to send their sons and daughters exactly the same way as we are sending their sons and daughters to war. And they will have to fight because it's NATO that we're talking about. And they will be dying, God forbid, because it's a horrible thing.
What did you make of that?
Well, there are two things. First of all, he's admitting the truth. Ukraine cannot win this war. And the losses they've taken fighting the Russians in southern Ukraine have been horrific. The Russians have invited the Ukrainians, now certainly since September, to attack them in southern Ukraine relentlessly. And that's exactly what the Ukrainians have done. And they have taken horrendous losses. In December, January, first part of February, they were losing 1,000 men a day. Before that, it was roughly a battalion a day of 500, 600, 700. I think they're back to about a battalion a day now. It's dropped simply because they've run out of troops. And they've decided that they're going to hold Bakhmut to the last man. There are about 2,000 to 3,000 of them in Bakhmut. They're trying to put more reinforcements in there. But Bakhmut has been a bloodbath for Ukraine. And for every Ukrainian or for every Russian soldier who was killed and wounded, there have been 7 or 8 Ukrainians killed or wounded. This is a losing proposition for them. So in that sense, he's being honest. The only way he can win is with NATO help and specifically with us to come in, because obviously, with the exception of potentially the Poles, nobody else is going to join that. Now, the second part is this. Biden knows and his advisors know that if he tries to commit the United States to war in eastern Ukraine against Russia, he's finished. His administration is finished. It's over. That is not going to happen. That's an impossibility.
So then, does Biden want another Afghanistan? I mean, on his resume, we have the Inspector General for the Afghan War, John Sopko, just coming out and saying that the American-made weapons falling into the wrong hands. We can't track any of these weapons. They're falling into all sort. And now we have the admission that the Russians have captured American weapons. That's another big piece of the story we wanted to ask you about today. So the Inspector General for the Afghan War saying we're literally on the precipice of seeing another disaster like we saw in Afghanistan. I guess that's going to be on Biden's resume.
Well, I think that's probably inevitable because the Russians will win this. They will do whatever it takes. We will not. We have no vital strategic interest in Ukraine, certainly not in eastern Ukraine, never really did. And no one in Europe wants to march east to Moscow to end the war. Remember that Zelensky and his defense minister made a comment the other day that this war will end with Ukrainian tanks in Red Square. Well, that's absurd. It's never going to happen. So I think we just have to understand that this is a desperate situation. The Ukrainian government is very weak. It's held in power by, you know, these neo-Nazi radicals that threaten to murder anyone who threatens them. They're killing soldiers that leave the front, that try to escape. They're filling the ranks with old men, women, you know, young boys. This is insanity. That's where we are. How long can this last? Well, that's up to the Russians, because the only way the Russians can put an end to this is to sweep north out of the south, to come down out of the north from Belarusia, surround Kiev and make it clear that they're through. That's what the Russians ultimately have to do. If they don't do that, this thing will just drag on. We'll continue to send things, and they'll continue to kill Ukrainians until there are almost none left. And remember that all the Ukrainian refugees that you talk to in Western Europe, there are perhaps 8 or 9 million of them. There are another 2 million inside Russia. They all say the same thing. We'll never go back. So they're not coming back. So the population has dropped from about 37.4 down to somewhere between 18 and 22 million. Ukraine is dead as a nation state, in my judgment. It's already dead. 40% of its cities, infrastructure is destroyed. All of its industrial base, everything that is of any real value in Ukraine, the Russians are sitting on. And that's traditionally being Russian, and the people who live there are Russian. That's the whole point. So I don't know where Ukraine goes from here other than what you just heard. And remember, every small state knows that if it wants to win, it can only win if it can drag in somebody bigger to win it for them. Serbia was successful in enticing Russia to join it in its fight against Austria-Hungary. That of course, precipitates World War I. We entered the war in 1917 and showed up in great strength in 1918 because the British and the French were losing the First World War to Germany. Had we not entered, we'd have ended up with a very different picture strategically in Europe. We were dragged in as a means of rescuing British and French imperialism. So, you know, these things have happened before. I don't see any evidence that the American people will go along with this. And here's the other part. Our armed forces are in terrible shape.
Right.
Who are you going to send? I think out of the entire army, somebody told me that we might be able to get 50,000 combat troops out there. That means the people that close with and destroy the enemy. The army is in shambles. I'm sure Milley has given this bad news to Biden and his friends. So I don't see anything like that happening. I think Zelensky is just, it's just hot air. He's saying whatever he has to try and stay in power. He wants us to do whatever is possible to keep him there. We want to keep him there. But the utility of maintaining him indefinitely is going to wear thin here over the next few months.
Well, it seems like it's happening at a heightened or quickened pace at this point, but it seems like the United States is continuing to ramp up the amount of weapons. It's unbelievable. We have two stories in the same day where Lockheed Martin is ramping up production of HIMARS, sending those in to appease the need in Ukraine. While at the same time, we have this admission that the U.S. simply really has no idea where these weapons are even going. So it seems like, Colonel, that we're going to continue to send in these long-range weapons, and that's what Ukraine's asking for.
Well, remember, Clayton, we need to keep in mind that the money that supports all of this doesn't really leave Washington. It's just recycled through the military-industrial congressional complex machine.
Right.
So the Pentagon sends the things over and then takes the money that they get from Congress and they pour that into industry, the arms industry, telling them, you have to replace what we're sending. And in addition to that, you need to produce more. And we're having trouble with that, by the way. We have no surge capacity. And people are talking about China right now. And what people don't understand in the United States, we did send our manufacturing base to China. That's true. We didn't do it voluntarily, necessarily. It was done by the elites. They decided that was a way to make a buck. But the result is that China has an industrial base devoted to military production that is potentially twice the size of the industrial base we had during World War II. Now, we just snubbed China's proposal for peace. We wouldn't even consider it. And if you're sitting in Beijing and you had any reservations about assisting Russia, those are over. So you're going to send Russia whatever Russia needs because your assumption is, you know, we in Beijing are next on the menu. If Russia fails, they'll go to war with us. we don't seem to understand our impact on the rest of the world. And what we've done to ourselves is created an insoluble problem. So as far as weapons go, yes, we're going to continue to dump them in there because people back here are enriching themselves. There are people in Ukraine enriching themselves. We know the Ukrainians resell things all the time. We see them in Kosovo. We see them down in Iraq. We see them all over the place. That's not news. Although I was told this morning that I guess it's the General Accounting Office, I'm not sure, the IG, several people in Washington said that we've now gotten control of everything, so we have perfect visibility on all the weapons and where it goes. You know, that goes along with sightings of unicorns and elves and Santa Claus and the Good Fairy.
Right.
But that's where we are. So no, it's not going to change. It's going to continue. And that's why the Russians have got to reach the conclusion that they're the only ones that can end this war. And they've got to do that.
So what's left of Ukraine? I mean, you believe Ukraine is dead. It's done.
I think it is. It's a great tragedy. I don't see how this Ukrainian nation state survives. It was always an artificial construct. You always had too many non-Ukrainians in it, which meant that you had to make a decision. Do we say, all right, you're a citizen of Ukraine, but you can be a Russian. You're a citizen of Ukraine, but you can be a Tartar. You're a citizen of Ukraine, but you can be whatever. As long as you swear allegiance to Ukraine and do business here, we'll work with you. You can have your own language, your own schools, and so forth. That opportunity was lost. That was part of the Minsk Accords. That's what the Russians were asking for. That's gone. So the area that the Russians are sitting on will never be turned back to the Ukrainians. The Russians will never leave that. That's part of Russia. More of Ukraine is going to be swallowed by Russia before this is through. I dare say most of the Ukraine east of the Dnieper River. But the Russians also know that Odessa and Kharkov are two Russian-speaking cities. They were never Ukrainian. They were always Russian. I'm sure they're going to insist on those. The real question is, what do you do with the rest of Ukraine, the western part of Ukraine, which really is Ukrainian, not partially Ukrainian, not Russified or anything else, really is Ukrainian? I don't know. I mean, the Poles all already seem to aspire to acquire it as part of the restoration of the great Polish-Lithuanian Empire. I don't know. I mean, there are all sorts of crazy ideas and views in play right now. None of this has anything to do with us, Clayton.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
And that's why American soldiers are not going there to fight.
Despite what Zelensky's calling for. Unbelievable. Well, Colonel, thank you so much for this. As always, thank you for your analysis and the nuance. We really appreciate it. And we'll continue to, I guess we'll see how amazing Washington is being able to track all of these weapons that they have a pinpoint accuracy through Ukraine and the rest of the world. It's going to be fascinating. Thank you so much, Colonel. We really appreciate it as always.
Sure. Thank you.
So our thanks to the Colonel as always. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate it. Well, it is no secret. If you're tuned in, then you know the experts are predicting a recession heading our way. Layoffs already happening, and the government is ready to print more money, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. While last year was terrible for most investors, 2023 could be even worse. That is, unless you were smart and you invested in gold, then you were protected from the losses. While other investments fell, if the experts are right and we hit a recession, 2023 is even going to be perhaps better for gold and silver. It already is. We're already seeing a six-month high for gold. That's fantastic. The demand for silver is off the charts. Now, if you're interested in investing in gold, the folks at Lear Capital will help you get started purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or your 401k into a gold and silver IRA. So you can call Lear Capital today at 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Right now, if you buy 1 ounce of gold, Lear Capital is giving away a free ounce of silver. So you buy 1 ounce of gold, they're giving away a free ounce of silver. That's incredible. That's free money. That's literally free silver that you can keep or do whatever you want with it. Sell it immediately. But as the price of silver continues to climb, you've gotten it for free. Why wouldn't you hang on to it? There are a lot of gold companies to choose from, and Lear Capital has over 25 years experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and a risk-free guarantee that gives you 24 hours to review your purchase before committing to Lear to it, to anything. So Lear Capital will say, hey, right, you don't want to invest in gold? Fine, no problem. Your choice. It's it's our top choice when buying gold and silver, the friends, our friends over at Lear Capital. So call them today. The 1-800 number is right there on your screen. 1-800-613-3557. Again, the number is right there on your screen. 1-800-613-3557. Or go to LearRedacted.com and get your free gold and silver investor's guide right now. So LearRedacted.com. All right, guys, you guys ready to talk some vaccine passports? Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Always.
Always. Let's talk about this. So the World Health Organization is pushing for global vaccine passports. At the same time, they are pushing for global pandemic powers through the, what's known as the CA Plus treaty that we have been discussing here on the show. And God, we get a lot of emails from you guys. So I read your emails every morning. Many of you, hundreds of emails that you send, and you're saying, please, please do not let this happen. What can we do, Clayton, to stop this treaty? What can we do? And I think, you know, at the heart of it is really letting your elected officials know you do not want to have anything to do with this. That's one way. Flood their office with calls. That's one way for them to know about it. They want to win re-election. If they know that their entire constituency is pissed off about this, that's one way. So this pandemic treaty gives the WHO, the World Health Organization, power to declare and manage global pandemic emergencies. Now, this would mean that they could mandate lockdowns, vaccine mandates, vaccine supplies and distribution, and monitoring and surveillance of populations. The WHO began the meeting to work out the draft of this treaty on Monday. And we're going to be looking for the results of that meeting when it ends on Friday. So many of you are asking, Clayton, what's the update on this meeting that started on the 27th? Well, it's still going on. So we'll have an update for you on Friday as soon as we have this information and what the answer is here. Meanwhile, they're also pushing for global vaccine passports through a series of proposed amendments to the international health regulations, which goes back to 2005, a legally binding instrument that imposes various conditions on 196 different member states. Vaccine passports would be digital and paper records of your health records, your travel history, everywhere you go, every person you visit, every train you're on, every plane you're on, every rest stop you stop at. Think about that, right? Every rest stop on the highway. You think you have anonymity on the turnpike? You don't. Your vaccine status for all vaccines and an assessment of your threat level based on various data points about you. This is not a conspiracy theory, guys. This is in their documents, specifically in their documents. Your threat level. What's your threat level? Can you imagine like dating apps? Like instead of like, do you like dogs? Like must love dogs, you know, like likes long walks on the beach. Now you must like include in the dating app, like, you know, your threat level. Like what's your threat level, you know?
Well, and it seems like the threat level would have to be added by other people because it wouldn't make sense if you got to add your own threat level because I'm not a threat, you know?
Well, I mean, but you would have to add it. Maybe it's tied directly into, like, you know how you have an API when you log into certain things? Maybe now you have, like, mm-hmm. your own API. You log in with your
Google verification. I scan my microchip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it pulls your data in without you having to put it in anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. That works.
It would be readable and it would be shareable according to the WHO countries. This is in their document, across the globe, and it could be used to stop you and your luggage from crossing the borders. Again, in the paperwork. We went through it today. We went through the documentation. Here are the things that the WHO would be able to do based on the changes to this document. Okay, so let's go through their document. Article 18, recommendations with respect to persons, baggage, cargo, containers, conveyances, goods, and postal parcels. Look at all this. Recommendations issued by the WHO to state parties with respect to persons may include the following advice. No specific health measures are advised. Review travel history in affected areas. Review proof of medical examination and any laboratory analysis. Require medical examinations. Review proof of vaccination or other prophylaxis. Require vaccination and other prophylaxis. That's hard to say quickly. Please place suspect persons under public health observation. In other words, detain them, throw them into a lockdown. So they could detain you.
Wow.
They could stop you. They could require a medical exam on the spot, quarantine you, and place you under observation.
Well, and it's not, and when they say place suspect, that's not like they're saying, hey, come on over here. We're going to put you in here. No, when they place you, you pick something up and you place it somewhere, right?
Right.
That means you are forcefully getting placed where they want you.
Well, and we already saw that in Australia. We saw that in other parts of the world, being placed in camps, held against your will. People escaping and telling the world about these places. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? I mean, it's crazy. So
also know that, well, detaining people, especially in the U.S., like detaining people often ends up in the people getting shot. So, I mean, is that what they're going to end up doing? Like you're resisting arrest at this point? Like that's a dangerous game.
Yeah. And we saw the data in the newsletter today. We covered how so many people behind bars ended up dying due to negligence, basically, during the pandemic. So being locked up, put away, held against your will by the government because they don't like your status, your vaccine status. They could also take possession of your luggage or other possessions, according to the documents. Now, Reclaim the Net published changes to this document today, and they did a good job. And here are the countries that submitted proposed changes. This is kind of stunning. So the countries reviewed this. These countries on the list here: Armenia, Bangladesh, Brazil, Czech Republic, India, Indonesia, Malaysia, Namibia, New Zealand, Republic of Korea, Russian Federation, Switzerland, USA, Uruguay. Do you notice anything funny, though, on this list? Keep it up here for a second. Do you notice anything funny on this list, guys? Why is Brazil on this list? When this was submitted in 2022, when Jair Bolsonaro was still in office, didn't he say he was not going to go along with anything that gave the WHO power over Brazil? He told us that publicly. Yet there they are, making proposals for vaccine passports in 2022. So in the draft, you can find this language for international vaccine passports. Here's the vaccine passport language proposed draft. When a public health emergency or of international concern has been declared for the purposes of entry and exit of international travelers in a scenario of voluntary vaccination using products still at the research phase or subject to very limited availability, vaccine certificates should be considered approved in accordance with the normal framework of the country of origin, including with reference to the model format of certification and vaccination schedule. And the contingents of digital documents. Paper certificates must be assigned by the clinician indicating the administration of the vaccine or other prophylaxis, or by other duly authorized health professional. Digital certificates must incorporate a means to verify authenticity from an official website. For example, a QR code.
Well, remember what this is saying about the certificates and everything. Like, they just took a lot of powers away from doctors in California to be able to decide what they want to prescribe for people, and saying that you have to follow the exact thing that they're telling you to do. So it's like they're saying in this that you have options, but they're already taking those options away. So it's only going to be a one size fits all solution.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's not going, they're not going to look at it on a case by case basis. It's here's the document. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what, how old you are, whatever your sort of exemptions are, it doesn't matter. It's all here in your, you know, it's going to be all here in your documentation. They want vaccine certificates to be digital, of course, so that all countries can verify them with a QR code. They call this binational, according to the documents. In fact, most of the countries on this list asked for this standardization of vaccine certificates. So all that, those countries on that list were like, we need a standard QR code, digital. This was a problem for countries that wanted to validate other countries' COVID vaccines during the pandemic. Europe could validate all EU vaccines, but most countries could not validate across borders. These codes should also digitize information about where the traveler is going and when they and where they have been. That's in there. Here's the vaccine passport documentation language that was changed. This was already done in the passenger locator forms. Documents containing information concerning traveler's destination should preferably be produced in digital form when paper form as a residual option. Such information should not duplicate the information the traveler already submitted in relation to the same journey. But now they want this standardized and built into vaccine passports. I mean, this is crazy. And every time we had to travel, this drove my wife crazy, because she's the Virgo in the family. So she's the one that does all the documentation. So when we're flying, we had to put in passenger locator forms every stinking time. So not only do we have the information, like we're already traveling somewhere, now we also have to fill out these ridiculous passenger locator forms. We almost missed our flight like three different times because of these stupid things.
Well, and think about that. That plays right into the 15-minute city thing. Like you'll probably be filling those out for that scenario.
Yeah, I need to travel more than 15 minutes. I need an exemption. So here's my paper. Yeah. Let me travel. Yeah, see our whole video last night on the 15-minute cities explanation. Watch that video. So the Czech Republic is also concerned that the committee that runs the next pandemic is gender balanced. Here is their edit. This is the Czech Republic made an edit to the document about the emergency committee. They want gender balance. The WHO, including through the WHO Academy, shall provide them with support as appropriate and underlined. At least one member of the emergency committee should be an expert nominated by the state party within those territory that event arises. But we want gender balance. India's edits include augmenting the term surveillance and other terms like that. So this is in the vaccine passport data, and for some reason they have that in a column form. In particular, definitions of health products, disease outbreak, epidemic, pandemic, and public social measures, risk communication, etc. Definition of surveillance also should be further augmented for community-based surveillance. Syndromic surveillance, case-based surveillance, laboratory surveillance, genomic surveillance, and event-based surveillance. Genomic surveillance? What?
Oh, okay, hang on. Yeah, no, I was gonna call that genomic surveillance. So this is like you can no longer opt out of like having your genome run. They just want your DNA, right. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Wow. Attack of the clones. It's coming.
Malaysia also added to this list. They've made changes. Malaysia proposes that even non-WHO states should be compelled to comply with this, in this edit, health measures taken pursuant to these regulations, including the recommendations made under Article 15 and 16 by all state parties and applied in a transparent, equitable, there's that equity, equitable stuff. State parties should also take measures to ensure non-state actors operating in their respective territories comply with such measures. So even people who are not part of the WHO states still have to be a part of this. That's what they're saying. This document gives the WHO a lot of power, not just in pandemic, but in pandemic potential, specifically with these edits by the United States. So the United States gives the WHO pandemic powers even when the event has not been determined to meet the guidelines. Way to go, the United States steps in with their edits on the document. So, oh, it's not an emergency? Well, the United States is still going to cede power to the WHO in this instance. Isn't that amazing? It's not an emergency.
Think about that. Here you go. It's exactly like the little aliens that are in the toy machine on Toy Story. You know, the claw. That's what they want everybody to be, because it's like, anything that you create, you're going to discriminate against somebody, but they're talking about no discrimination. Like, that's impossible.
Right. Yeah. And well, no discrimination at all. And then also now, if it's not an emergency, it doesn't really matter. You still have the powers, right? This is like the United States not ever declaring a war. So we still go to war, but we never declare a war. Congress doesn't have to sign off on it, but hey, we're still in all these wars anyway. So we don't have to call it that. But here's how the United States changed it. Where an event has not been determined to meet the criteria for a public health emergency of international concern, but the Director General has determined it requires heightened international awareness and a potential international public health response, the Director General, on the basis of information received, may determine at any time to issue an intermediate public health alert to state parties and may consult the emergency committee in a manner consistent with the procedure set out in Article 49. So again, if it's not an international concern, we'll still give you the power.
So does that mean we're basically fighting for democracy only until this is implemented? Because then democracy goes out the window. Like, it's like this, yeah. That's like our beacon. We are the beacon of democracy, but it's like, yeah, only until this is implemented, then we're done with democracy.
Yeah, and I guess the idea of democracy.
Well, it's fine because we can vote
out the window anyway. Yeah,
we can always vote the WHO out, right?
No,
we can always just vote them out.
No, you can't. As an unelected body of billionaires run by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, funded almost largely and almost entirely by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You don't get to vote them out. They're actively involved in this. I have to imagine while this meeting is going on, Bill Gates is literally on nonstop phone calls over the next few days during this meeting, ironing out all the details with these world leaders to make sure that this happens. So that he can funnel.
In 20 years, he's going to be like, I shouldn't have went to all those dinners.
Yeah, it was the dinners.
Right.
So there's a lot of power being handed over to the WHO here. Again, an organization that did not prove itself during the COVID pandemic. It'd be different if they were like Superman, you know? No, it was the opposite. They were like Lex Luthor. And surely they'll be adding another mandatory vaccine to these passports in short order. So not just the status, but then, of course, what is the actual vaccine that you'll need to get in the next pandemic? Because that's coming. So here it is, RSV. The FDA advisors recommended Tuesday that the agency approve the country's first RSV vaccine for older people. This is a shot from Pfizer for people ages 60 and up. And this was a pretty narrow vote, actually, the FDA recommending an RSV shot. Several.
Guess what kind of technology they're going to use in it.
Yeah. Is it mRNA?
You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So several of the experts who did not vote in favor based on the vaccine's efficacy expressed concerns that there were not enough trial participants infected with RSV to adequately assess the shot. But as we've learned, you don't need people. You don't need trials, right? We have a story coming up in a few minutes. We've got an MIT professor, Retzef Levy, on who literally has been sounding the alarm about all these pregnant women who've been taking the shots, and pregnant women weren't even approved. They weren't a part of the trials. So you don't need people, right? You just need 8 mice. So they don't need people. Anyway, those who voted no based on the vaccine safety profile largely worried about its potential association with the Guillain-Barré syndrome, or GBS. Am I saying that right? Guillain? I think I'm saying that right?
I think it's Julian, isn't it?
Julian? Yeah. Guillain-Barré?
No, Julian, because it's... I think. You were saying it right the first time. I've heard it pronounced Guillain-Barré, like you were saying.
Guillain-Barré? Okay.
Okay.
Guillain.
It's a rare neurological disorder that damages nerve cells and causes muscle weakness or paralysis. So they're worried about its potential association with this. So I'm sure it's nothing. Look away. Who cares, right? Quote, it was in 1 in 9,000 risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is concerning, says Dr. Hanna El Sahli of the FDA Advisory Committee chair. 1 in 9,000. Who voted against the shot based on the safety profile, but in favor based on its efficacy.
Well, and they sell that by, hey, do you want the 1 in 9,000 for that, or you want people dead? Like, that's how they'll sell it. It's yeah. Either that or, you know, we accept that number or people die.
Exactly. Never mind the adverse effects or any of that. So don't worry about that. But they'll be requiring this soon enough, the RSV vaccine. So there you go. We'll continue to watch this WHO story, and we'll see how this vote and all of the meetings unfold over the next few days. But we are losing power, and they are conceding it to an unelected body of billionaires run by Bill Gates, basically. We've got more stories coming up here on the show. We're going to talk about natural immunity, a new study out about that, and vaccines. So we'll talk about natural immunity. We're also going to look at vaccines for pregnant women. So we've got a pretty heavy vaccine show tonight that we're going to talk about. But first, let me tell you about our store. Should we do our store? Let's tell them about our store, shall we? If you go to redactedstore.com, we've got some great merch over there. You can support independent journalism and what we do here on Redacted. And we've got some mugs, great hats, some hoodies, really warm hoodies. I forget, Grim was saying that our polos are made on what type of, what is it called again? I even brought it up.
Now I can't remember.
I can't remember. You can't remember. None of us can remember. Anyway,
it's
they're
very
really
good quality.
It's really good quality, and people love it. People are like, these are super comfortable. And so it's a really high quality, and all of it is so great. So check them out. Go to redactedstore.com. Redactedstore.com is the place to go to check that out. That's one of my favorite hats there, the gray hat there as well. All right. Let's talk about natural immunity. A new study finds that having had COVID provides at least as much immunity as 2 doses of the COVID vaccine. This is not what I'm saying. This is a new study that is just out. And this is something that most people knew for a long time, yet the media went to great lengths not to admit it, and the government totally ignored it. In fact, It's something Dr. Fauci openly talked about years ago when he appeared on C-SPAN. And when a caller called in and said, hey, I just had the flu, should I go get a flu shot? And he said, you've got the best shot there is. You got natural immunity. There's nothing better. He said that. Then suddenly everyone got amnesia about that. So this comes now from the Lancet Medical Journal. These are not my words. Disclaimer. This new study comes from the Lancet Medical Journal. And it reviewed 65 prior studies. Not just one or two. 65 prior studies that concluded that the prior infection can be considered, quote, inoculation, according to the Lancet Medical Journal. Not only did natural exposure provide immunity as well as the vaccines, it also provided protection against severe disease for all the variants, all of them, according to the Lancet Medical Journal. The CDC and the White House admonished people to get COVID vaccines, even if they had COVID recently. Didn't matter, just go get it anyway. And people did, because they were scared about it. You made them scared. Which is one of the first signs that something was not right. Like, why are they telling you to go and get this thing even though you just had the virus? What's going on here? Namely, the government suggested a one-size-fits-all basically medical care with no exceptions. Sound familiar? This is exactly what we just talked about in our segment on the World Health Organization. A one-size-fits-all vaccine passport story. If you missed that segment, go and check that video out that we just published. So here's the CDC's website today. Still ignoring this data. This is the CDC's website today. This is not my words. This is the CDC's website. If I already had COVID-19 and recovered, do I still need to get a COVID-19 vaccine? Is the question. You should get a COVID-19 vaccine even if you already had COVID-19. A COVID-19 vaccine after you recover from COVID-19 infection provides added protection against COVID-19. So that's what the CDC's website says today. This link that they have there says that the people who are unvaccinated have a higher likelihood of getting COVID. That's from a 2021 study that studied people in Kentucky for 1 month and found that people who were not vaccinated had a 2.34, that's 2%, two times higher odds of reinfection than those who were vaccinated. Okay, so 1 month of data is not a long-term study, and they sampled 246 people. That's it. With a control group of 492 people. They did not test for symptomatic COVID or hospitalization, only reinfection. Plus, we have a very different data set now showing the opposite is actually true. Much larger data set from what the CDC was highlighting on their website or linking to on their website. Just last December, the Cleveland Clinic published a study of 51,000 people, slightly better than the 246 people they studied, wouldn't you say? And found that people with more vaccines had a higher infection rate. We did this whole story on the show when it was published. I don't know if you guys remember this, but again, this is the Cleveland Clinic's study right here on the screen. I didn't do this. This is the Cleveland Clinic. They published a study of 51,000 people and found that people with more vaccines had a higher infection rate. The black line at the bottom of the screen is the unvaccinated population, showing very low rates of COVID infection in the 51,000 people. Each colored line shows how many vaccines someone has and the rate of infection goes up in a linear fashion. So we now know that when you get COVID, you train your body to respond better to COVID. Imagine that. Just like getting
because you're actually getting
it, right? Or, you know, yeah, you're actually getting it.
Like, remember when, do you remember chicken pox parties? Like where kids would get together and everybody would just get it. So if we would have had that, everything would have been better than what we did.
Like the Amish. That's exactly what the Amish did.
Exactly. Yeah.
Go ahead, Philip.
Oh, I was just gonna say I'm no scientist, but that seems like the opposite of what we're being told. It seems like it's trending the wrong way.
I think you've got that flipped.
Yeah, flip it the other way. Is that upside down?
I know. Is it chart upside down? No. And again, we're being lied to, right? I mean, they're hiding this from us. And so we know that when you get COVID, you train your body to respond better to COVID. Imagine. But this is something that Pfizer executive Scott Gottlieb tried to get wiped from social media. You remember the CNBC contributor Scott Gottlieb and Pfizer board member Scott Gottlieb. We learned this from the Twitter files, and he tried to hide this. And here it is. This is his email. Here's his email to Twitter saying that discussion of natural immunity is corrosive. Oh, this is the tweet he wanted removed from Dr. Brett Guerre. I think Guerre, saying it's now clear COVID-19 natural immunity is superior to vaccine immunity by a lot. And I love it. You know, maybe the only thing that's bad about this is that a lot is spelled as one word instead of A space L-O-T. There's no science justification for vax proof if a person had prior infection. CDC director and POTUS must follow the science. If no previous infection, get vaccinated? Twitter flagged this as misleading based on what we don't know. The study in Kentucky of 246 people. Another YouTuber and wellness coach found that the words natural immunity have been suppressed and manipulated since at least the year 2021. So if you looked at, watch this. This is Andrea Beeman. Watch.
I clicked on the word natural immunity and a box popped up for me on Instagram and it said, looking for vaccine info? When it comes to health, everyone wants reliable, up-to-date information. Visit the World Health Organization website. The website has information that can help answer any questions that you may have about vaccines. Now, I didn't actually have a question about vaccine. I just clicked on the hashtag natural immunity. And then on that box, there were two options for me. I could go to the website or I could see the post anyway. So when I clicked on see the post anyway, another box popped up and said, this hashtag is hidden. Posts for hashtag natural immunity have been limited because the community has reported some content that may not meet Instagram's community guidelines.
The guideline for saving lives or what? Like, what guideline is that?
I love it. I mean, it's unbelievable. We live in a freaking crazy time. I swear to God, it's unbelievable. But now we have new research that even the mainstream media is now acknowledging about natural immunity to COVID-19. Even NBC News is now reporting that to be the case, although their pro-vaccine bias is very clear in this segment. Watch this. This is NBC.
Erica, I remember earlier in the pandemic, shortly after vaccines became widely available, the CDC doing a study saying the amount of natural immunity people get varies sometimes from person to person. This study seems to be suggesting something a little bit different. So put this in simple terms for us. People who were infected, are they just as likely to be protected against COVID as those that were vaccinated, or is there a bit of variation?
Hey, good afternoon. It can be a little bit confusing, so let me be really clear. This study is not saying that you won't be reinfected if you already had the COVID-19 illness. What we're talking about is protection against severe illness if you are reinfected. So here's what the study is saying in really plain language. If you had COVID, you will be protected against becoming really sick or dying if you were to be reinfected, again, by 88%. That protection, according to the study, lasts for at least 10 months. That's really significant and really good news considering that we've had almost 103 million cases of COVID-19 since the pandemic began in this country alone. And we're still logging an average of 35 to 40,000 cases every single day. Ellison,
Joe. Okay, so this study finds the risk of being in the hospital or the risk of death is lowered, but what about the symptoms that come from COVID?
It's a really great point because while the immunity that comes from infection is robust and apparently long lasting, getting COVID also carries the risk for severe complications, especially for our older adults. People with underlying conditions like diabetes, the virus itself can cause trouble breathing, extreme fatigue, not to mention long COVID, even ongoing heart problems. None of those outcomes have been associated with the vaccine. So that's why experts say it's really still the safest way to get immunity, to get those vaccines rather than becoming ill in the first place.
Oh, okay. Wow. So they're saying here that you should not rely on COVID infection for immunity because COVID itself sucks, but the vaccine does not prevent infection. She says that long COVID is associated with severe complications and ongoing heart problems, and that those outcomes are not associated with the vaccine. Really? What data does she have around that, I wonder? Can you please provide it? I'd love to see that evidence. At least now we can discuss natural immunity, though, at least in a way that you could not before. We were very afraid to do this, that term from the year 2020 to 2021, natural immunity. And this follows what the Wall Street Journal calls a pandemic pattern. Here's what the Wall Street Journal says. The Lancet's study's vindication of natural immunity fits a pandemic pattern. The public health clerisy rejects an argument that ostensibly threatens its authority. Eventually, it's forced to soften its position in the face of incontrovertible evidence. And yet not once does it acknowledge its opponents were right. That's exactly what it is. Well, are they going to come out and apologize? We can apply this to so many things now. The conspiracy theory turns out to be true, pandemic pattern, right? Masking, school lockdowns, vaccine mandates, natural immunity, government profits. And what hurts about making this right is what it costs so many people. People lost their jobs for refusing the vaccine because they had COVID. They already had it. And so why am I getting a vaccine? I've already had it. I have natural immunity. We've been told for years natural immunity is great. Suddenly it doesn't exist anymore. We're not supposed to have that. So you lose your job.
Did you see the interview with a brain surgeon that was let go? A brain surgeon because he refused because he had natural immunity.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, in California. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like you think somebody that knows the body and understands, like those people go through hardcore medical training and understand these things, and yet they're going to lose their job because they don't go with an agenda or a plan of people that don't know what they're talking about, obviously, because it changed so many different times.
Yeah. Well, we spoke to one city council member from California who said that he had to fire firefighters and teachers who did not want to get vaccinated because they had COVID. And yet the state was pushing them to do just that based on ideology. This council member told us this. He had no choice. It's not science. It's because, as the journal points out, the science on the supposition that prior COVID infection could protect against future illness was deeply rooted in immunology before studies bore it out. And we knew this. We knew this. And of course, in the terms of service, I think even believed, like on video platforms, like you were not allowed to talk about this. I mean, video suppressed, blocked. We were banned even talking about this. It's amazing. It's amazing. But they won't apologize. And it's all about profits. You know, I saw something today I thought was really, really hit the nail on the head. Said, what should we have done about COVID? And the answer actually is nothing. If you think about it, right?
What the Amish did, nothing.
Nothing. Right? I mean, I suppose you could have, can you argue against that, really? I mean, I guess if you have comorbidities, like you'd want to try to, you know, wash your hands, make sure you're not getting grandpa sick, I guess. But in the same way that if you've got the flu, maybe you stay home from school, you just don't go to school for those few days because you don't want to get everyone sick, right? I don't know. But I thought that was a really interesting, we did all of these things. In fact, we should have done nothing. And now we're getting ready to do it all over again with the vaccine passports and this new push for an RSV vaccine and more. Let us know your thoughts on that in the comments below. What do you think about all of this? Please smash that like button if you haven't already done so. It really helps to push the show out into the algorithm a little bit further. So please, please, please hit that like button. It really does help. I know it sounds trite, like, oh, you got to press a like button, but it actually does help. Because as we get suppressed, we're independent media. It really helps break through that. So we do, we're going to be talking about vaccines for pregnant women and the new data on that in just a moment. MIT professor Retzef Levy is going to be joining us to discuss that. But first, we should tell you about our newsletter and our community, right? If you go to redacted.inc, that's the place to go. It's our website, not .com, it's .inc. Because so many people write, they're like, I tried to go to your website, but it's not there. No, it's INC, not .com. We couldn't get the .com. And you sign up for our community. Click on the join button there. If you're on Rumble, you can click the red button to join our locals community. But if you're not on Rumble, if you're just watching us on YouTube, that's great. You can also just click on the community tab and become a Redacted Rebel VIP. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism, support what we do here, the guests that we have on the show, the staff that we have here to be able to bring you this news. Again, it's a free show, but if you'd like to contribute, if you can, great. It can really help us out tremendously and become a rebel. You get exclusive content, new videos just for you that won't be published anywhere else, early access to some great interviews that we're doing before anyone else gets to see them. So again, redacted.inc, you can become a Redacted Rebel VIP, redacted.inc. Well, the government continues to push vaccine recommendations for pregnant women, despite the fact that pregnant women were excluded from clinical trials. So what the heck is going on here? Why are they continuing to push on a population when there is no reliable safety data to weigh their decisions upon? Highly respected MIT professor and an expert on drug safety analytics is Retzef Levy, and he joins me now. Professor, good to see you again. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Clayton, for having me on the show. I think this is another example of really reckless policies that for some reason regulatory authorities are keep pushing in spite of many, many warning signals.
So why are these governments continuing to push this? Why is this happening?
So just to put it in context, I think that if you look traditionally if you look at policies regarding drugs, new drugs, new vaccines, there is usually very special care when it comes to pregnant women. In fact, by and large, we don't let women take any drug during pregnancy unless it's really, really a necessity. Now, in this case, it's even worse because, as you mentioned, the pregnant women were excluded from the original trial. And nevertheless, without any safety data, shortly after the vaccination campaign started, health authorities recommended to pregnant women to go and get vaccinated, sometimes recommending that it will happen only in the third or the second trimester. But nevertheless, this was done based on no safety data. In fact, Pfizer was asked by the EMA, the European Regulatory Authority, to conduct a study on pregnant women. And this study was supposed to enroll thousands of women and then end up only with a few hundreds. And it actually concluded the trial in mid-2022, and we still did not get any data from these trials. So there's a very strange phenomena that there is no safety on one hand, and even the safety data that is presumably available seems to actually not to be reported to the public. And this is in spite of very, very concerning, very, very concerning signals. We know by now that these vaccines have major impact on them, on the reproductive system of women, in the sense that we know that there are many, many women reporting about menses irregularities, sometimes very long-term ones, very serious ones. So that's almost by design means that there is some hormonal impact on the woman body that we still don't understand fully what it is, but it should keep us very, very concerned. But in addition, there are also at least a few studies that show sperm quality reduction for men when compared before and after vaccination. So we see even impact there. And again, the mechanism is not clear yet, but that should give you another reason to be very concerned that there is a potential impact on both fertility and as well as specifically on pregnancy outcomes. Now, the reason or what regulatory authorities are telling us, hey, They are, we don't need to report the data from the clinical trials, or we report it in a very, very cumbersome way that you cannot understand what's going on there other than, again, see very concerning signals. But don't worry, we have conducted multiple retrospective studies and everything seems to be okay because the vaccinated women and the unvaccinated women seem to have similar outcomes when it comes, for example, for preterm deliveries. These are deliveries that happen before week 37 or stillbirths for the sake of the matter. Now, what I think is that, and this is something fundamentally important, is that all of these studies are fundamentally biased. And in fact, when you look at them in the right way, you should actually be more concerned than reassured, like they try to, like the message that they try to pertain. And I would like to explain this to the viewers. Why are they
biased? Yeah, please. Yeah, let's explain why these biases in these studies. And for instance, you know, because too many of these COVID vaccine supporters have been pointing to these observational studies, right? Observational studies versus RCT studies. Can you explain the difference between these and why the mainstream media latches on to the observational studies to support their claims?
Well, I mean, randomized control experiment is the best quality evidence that we have. Women are randomly assigned for treatments. In this case, it will be vaccinated versus not vaccinated. And in a pregnancy trial that is specifically focused on pregnant women, like they were supposed to conduct, these would be pregnant women. And then you're going to follow them prospectively throughout their pregnancy and document any adverse events, any outcomes that they had. And you will be able to get a fair comparison between women that were vaccinated and women that were not vaccinated. This is not going to be perfect because you still don't have an idea necessarily about the long-term impact, but it's very, it's much, much better than any retrospective study that is almost always is going to be subject to many, many biases. What I'm going to talk about, though, is a fundamental bias that they have to consider and they don't consider. And in order to illustrate this to the viewers, I would like to give a completely different example and then fall back to the setting of pregnant women being vaccinated versus not. So, you know, think about the marathon. It's a 42 kilometer race. And let's think about the risk or the chances of marathon runners starting the race at the get going to finish the race, okay? And let's also assume that on the 40 kilometer, there is a station in which the runners can could pick up a cup of water, right? And now I'm asking you, hey, I'm gonna look on all the runners that picked up a cup of water, and I'm gonna ask myself, what is the risk that they will not finish the race, right? So I think it's gonna be quite obvious to people that if I look on all the runners starting the race versus just the runners that picked up a cup of water in the 40th kilometer, the latter should have a much better chance to finish the race. Why is that?
Right.
It's not because of the cup of water. It's just because by picking up the cup of water, we know that they arrived to the 40 kilometer and they just have two more kilometers to go, right? In fact, if I would tell you that the rate of runners that didn't finish the race among the people that picked up the cup of water is equal to the fraction of people that started the race that did not finish the race, you would start be very concerned that this cup of water is not that innocent, that maybe it actually has very, very negative impact on the runners. So what is the analogy, right? The analogy is that all of the studies that are out there currently look on a fixed period of time and they look on all the births on that period of time. And they try to look on births by vaccinated women and births by unvaccinated women and compare them. Unfortunately, what they don't consider is that this is a period in time in which the women are actually vaccinated. And we know, and this is there's a lot of data about this, that most women vaccinated very late in their pregnancy. Almost all of them were vaccinated after the first trimester, and most of them, or many of them, vaccinated in the third trimester. Now, this is really equivalent to picking up a cup of water for the following reason. When you think about the risk of having a stillbirth, for example, or the risk of having an early birth, it's clearly decreasing over time. Right. If you tell me that the woman arrived to her week 32 or 33, the risk of stillbirths is now significantly reduced. right? So when you actually compare women that were vaccinated to women that were not vaccinated, you're exactly comparing women that picked up the cup of water, because the fact that they were vaccinated means that they actually arrived to a very late gestational age, versus the unvaccinated women, that they are equivalent to the runners at the beginning of the race. You don't have any idea about them. And then you tell me, oh, they have the same outcomes, and you tell me that that's reassuring. That's actually quite the opposite of reassuring, but because you would expect that when you do such an analysis, you should see significantly fewer bad outcomes among the vaccinated women compared to the unvaccinated women, even if you assume that the vaccine is completely neutral, not because of the vaccine impact, but just because the mere fact that vaccinated women had to get to arrive to a late stage of their pregnancy. So this is not a fair comparison by design, and it's even worse. It's even worse because, let's just go back to the marathon example. Suppose that every single runner that arrived to the station would pick up a cup of water, right? And I'm going to do this comparison between the people that started the race and people that just picked up a cup of water. Essentially, all the people that started the race and did not pick up a cup of water had to finish the race before they did not finish the race, because they did not even arrive to the 40 kilometer. So if most women are vaccinated, it's not only that you bias the vaccinated women positively, you are biasing the unvaccinated women negatively. And you know, when you look on all of these studies, this is out there. This is one of the fundamental biases. There are other biases that they don't consider typically. For example, what are the characteristics of the population of women that vaccinate versus the women that did not vaccinate? And I think that this is another example when academic journals are letting people publishing good results that fit the narrative, that have a fundamental flaw, methodological flaw, that once considered, you actually becoming much more concerned than reassured. The problem is that if you try now to report this to the journals, you're not likely to get any attention, because people don't want to have any result, any indication that contradicts the narrative that everything is safe and effective. I really think that when it comes to pregnancy outcomes, we have to go back to the basics. We never give women during pregnancy any drug unless it's absolutely necessary. At this point, I don't see how someone claims that this is necessary or even remotely necessary to give a pregnant woman any vaccine, especially not this particular vaccine, the against COVID-19, during pregnancy. This is just reckless. And what is even more disturbing is the fact that they don't reveal the data that they have from the clinical trials, and they rely on studies that are completely flawed. And I'm speaking about this in a Twitter message that posted recently. People are invited to watch it. There are two videos. One is short and one is longer, that explains in more details the bias that I just kind of outlined to you.
And then also we have, I'll get you out of here on this, Professor, which is this new study that just came out, was published in the Lancet Medical Journal, which reviewed 65 prior studies that concluded that infection can be considered inoculation, so therefore natural immunity. And not only did natural exposure provide immunity to the vaccines, as well as the vaccines, it also provided protection against severe disease for all variants. It's always convenient that we're now hearing about this, and yet we knew about this years ago.
People have to understand, in June 2021, we are talking about almost 2 years ago, I was actually citing data that the CDC posted on their website that showed exactly what you just described, that natural immunity not only provides long-term robust protection against infection and particularly against severe illness, but in addition, that vaccination does not add to natural immunity. It does not add additional protection. And in fact, it does add some more risks in terms of side effects. I think that we know that if you are vaccinated after infections or getting infected after being vaccinated, because potentially because there is cumulative exposure to the toxic spike protein, you are more likely to experience either a severe illness or major side effects. So again, this is what is amazing here is that the CDC publishing data and then their conclusions are completely opposite to the numbers and the data that they put out there. I mean, in some cases they put data that is completely, you know, manipulated. But what is even more shocking that even when they put data that is clearly sending one message, the bottom line and the recommendation is going exactly the opposite direction. And that's really, really disturbing. When people talk a lot about misinformation, we need to worry about this as a major problem. I'm very worried that some of the regulatory authorities' data that is being put there, and more so even the analysis of the data, are completely, in my mind, often can fall very naturally into the category of misinformation.
It's unbelievable because we reported this at the time, and we were banned from YouTube. We were pulled off the platform for using those words in their terms of service. They literally talked about you couldn't talk about this.
You couldn't talk about the fact that maybe the virus was generated in a lab and leaked until maybe 4 days ago, when it became the truth or the formal version of the government. So wait 6 months. I think you're going to be fine. But the whole concept of misinformation is very destructive. And the reason why it's destructive is at some point you have to get to the point of who gets to decide what misinformation is.
Right.
You know, Galileo Galilei claimed that the Earth surrounds the sun and the Earth is rounded, right? At that point, he was considered as spreading misinformation. We know now that, well, luckily, he was insisting about the truth. So, you know, I think that there's no better way to have an open scientific debate and having all the opinions until the evidence is pointing to what is the truth. And what is happening over the last 3 years that centralized organizations with a lot of interests, tech companies, governments that have an interest and they are committed to certain narratives are trying to dictate to us what information is and what misinformation is. I think we should let scientists and let the evidence being shown. And I think I trust the wisdom of the crowd. People know at the end what is good for them. And I think we need to trust that. That's the basic principle of democracies.
Hallelujah. Well said. Professor, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your great wisdom in all of this. And people, we'll link up your Twitter feed as well so people can dive more deeply into some of the data surrounding the studies specifically. They can see some of the deeper slides on this. Professor, great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a great day.
And a reminder to all of you, we have a daily newsletter. We would love for you to subscribe. I think we had our biggest record sign up of new users yesterday for our free newsletter. And it was so great. I had so many emails from you saying thank you. This is a great way to start your morning. So if you go to redacted.inc, it's not .com, it's redacted.inc. Just put in your email address and then you'll receive a welcome email from me. Just clayton@redacted.inc. You'll get an email from me, and it'll ask you to confirm that you want to receive our newsletter. And then you click confirm so that you know it's not spam. And then tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning, East Coast time in the United States, you'll receive the newsletter where we cover about 5 or 6 big stories of the day. Hope to add a little smile to your face, get you out the door on your way, and a little bit more informed. We try to cover the stories you're not going to see in the mainstream media. Cut through the smoke, cut through the propaganda. So check it out again, redacted.inc, and you can sign up for our daily newsletter. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much to all of you for subscribing and being a big part of our show here. Thank you very, very much for joining us tonight. We're back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. 4 p.m. Eastern time is when we are live. So we will see you tomorrow, everyone, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.